This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Well, just a couple days ago, we passed the one-year mark of a positive COVID-19 case in Douglas County. And this time a year ago, things were shifting all over the place and certainly here locally as well. We want to take an in-depth look behind the scenes at the work of the Douglas Public Health Network in the past year. Now, this is going to be different than what you hear in our conversations with Dr. Bob Dannenhofer as we kind of focus on all those things that are going on that maybe folks aren't aware of, or for some of you, you've actually become more aware of them than you have wanted to be. Joining us now is Kristen Rutledge, DPHN Program Manager, and Vanessa Becker, DPHN Public Information Officer and the Epidemiology. I always have trouble with that word. I can't even get that one out right. The Epi Team Lead for the Blue Team. Vanessa, you can say the word better than me, apparently.
It is a mouthful. Epidemiology, or just Epi, is a lot shorter way of saying it.
All right, I'll work with that. Kristen, let's start with you. How many people worked at DPHN, let's say, in late February of last year?
We had six staff members last year, right at the end of February.
And how many do we have now?
We have over 30. And that we also have a team of surge people that are on call to come in and help out at any time as well.
So how first of all, how has your role shifted as in the past year? I'm guessing that maybe your job title even changed along the way. What's different about what you do on a regular daily basis?
It has shifted quite a bit. So a year ago, I was managing about seven programs. We were doing a lot of in-person community education, facilitating meetings with community partners where we were meeting in person, and working on these programs that were so great. And then we had COVID hit. I was helping in communicable disease before this, but now I'm really working in that quite a bit, working in COVID case investigation and epidemiology work. And while we're still doing the other programs, it's all virtual. So we're not able to do that in-person education with people or with our community partners.
So what were those first weeks like, Kristen, for you?
It's a whirlwind. It was a whirlwind. So we had a really small team during that time. We started getting all of these calls. One of our staff members remembers that we were trying to make outgoing calls, and we couldn't even do that because we were getting so many calls that were coming in. We were getting prepared for this. So we actually had a lot of meetings. We were thinking about this. This was something that was really on the forefront of our minds, but it just ramped up the work really, really fast within about a week.
So, Vanessa, I know a lot of things shifted for you before the end of February and when COVID hit.
Yeah, so my story, I agree with Kristen. It was definitely a whirlwind. So I was actually at a meeting with the ESD with a client. I was doing consulting full-time, and Dr. Dannenhofer came and spoke at the meeting about COVID. And that night, I sent an email to Dr. Dannenhofer, and I've worked with him in different capacities over the years, and said, hey, just a reminder, if you need any help, let me know. And next morning, he emails back and said, can you come down to the building? And I said, okay. So I packed my briefcase, and I went down, and they said, yeah, we need somebody to help with communications and somebody with a background in epidemiology like you have. And in the next hour, I was already working. So initially, what we thought was going to be temporary and short term, but it's evolved from there, and definitely been excited to join this team from, and I believe that was March 13th.
A lot of people may be familiar with your background, but for folks that aren't, talk about some of the other things you've done prior to this.
Yeah, so part of the reason why I think it was a good match for me is I have a background of master's in public health and epidemiology, and I also have done a lot of communications and leadership work around public health around the state, but then also locally here as well. And also was one of the folks that was really working hard on communications during our UCC event in 2015. And so crisis communications and public health, are both in my sort of wheelhouse. And I think that's why it was a good natural fit.
So, Kristen, what's your background?
I also have a master's in public health.
And how long have you worked at DPHN?
I have been at DPHN for just about 4 years now.
So when all of this hit, Kristen, how prepared were you? I mean, this was such a new thing, and I'm sure there have been a lot of shifts along the way. I know Dr. Dannenhofer had been tracking this since around the beginning of the year, maybe a little bit prior. But what was the ramp-up like for your staff?
So the really great thing about our staff is Teresa is our executive director, and she is amazing at work like this. She's been preparing us with exercises on emergency preparedness for a really long time. So we were ready to do a lot of like our drive-through that was able to get done so fast because we were prepared. We've also been meeting daily about COVID numbers. We've been looking around the world, what things look like in the U.S. So we were really thinking, what can we do locally to be prepared for this? So it doesn't kind of take us by surprise. So we actually did a lot of work prior to when this hit. I mean, it's still, like I said, a whirlwind, but we were still prepared.
And what kind of support was needed? How quickly did you ramp up the staffing levels?
Well, like I said, that first week we had six, and then we brought Vanessa in. We brought another person in to kind of get our hotline started, and we started getting volunteers. And we went from six people in our little spot that we were working in to over 20 volunteers during different times later that month.
Wow. So a big switch, and at the same time, probably a shift in how you set up an office and had people spread out and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hired the majority of our staff more in July that were working full time. And we did. So we had people in the building all of the time. We're working in our offices, and then realizing that that's not a safe way to do this. A lot of people work from home. We've been able to do that really successfully.
So, Vanessa, talk about what it's like to do contact tracing. Go into detail about the procedure and the process.
Yeah, so we have there's a couple different titles. We have our what we call our epidemiology case investigators, and then our epidemiology contact tracers, and then we also have a third category of what we title support specialists. And so those three positions, and then we have four teams of those positions. I am the team lead of the blue team, and we also have a green team and a red team and a purple team. And so when a case comes in, when we're alerted about a lab, for instance, a positive case, we reach out to that person immediately. So sometimes, particularly early on, we were oftentimes the first one to notify somebody that they had tested positive for COVID. That's shifted a little bit since we have rapid tests now. And so we actually still get those lab reports every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But we sometimes have what we call self reports as well, where people call and say, I just left my doctor's office, or I just left urgent care and tested positive. What do I do? And so that's the first step, is that we make contact with, whether it's self-report or whether we reach out to them and tell them that they are positive. And then we have usually about 45 to 60 minute long interview where we talk with them, first of all, we find out how they're feeling and if they need any medical support and answer questions about COVID. And we talk a little bit about, you know, where have you been and what have you been doing, and who are some of the close contacts that you have. So close contact is defined as in the Oregon investigative guidelines as somebody that you've had been closer than 6 feet for 15 minutes or more in the last 24 hours. So household people definitely are close contacts, workplace contacts. We have a conversation about, you know, who have you been around during your contagious period? And we find out when did their symptoms start? We have the conversation about, you know, where do you think you might have been exposed? If they don't have any idea, then we talk about that. And we really just sit down and have a conversation. And we ask, you know, what kind of supports do you need to stay in isolation and quarantine? And, you know, what can we do? You know, we've had stories where we make a phone call and somebody finds out and they're driving from, you know, say they're driving to the grocery store because they don't have any groceries. And, you know, we're telling them, you just tested positive, you should probably go home. Can we get you some groceries just to keep you at home and you know, help you figure out how to support you in isolation. So that's how the process all starts. And then from there, we make the contact with their contacts. And of course, there are more categories now. We have cases. Those are people who've tested positive or who are presumptive cases. And then we have contacts to those cases. And so then the next step would be reaching out and having our contact tracers reach out to the contacts and just explain that you've been exposed. We're recommending that you quarantine. Do you need anything? Do you have any questions? Do you have any symptoms? We've got lots and lots of stories about our contact tracers and support specialists just really going above and beyond to support people while they're in quarantine.
Now, we just got the new report out a few minutes ago, 16 new cases today, a presumptive, a death. I mean, at an hour a shot, there's a lot of time involved in interviewing folks, and that's just the initial interview. Then all the follow-up ones, it seems like just dealing with one person could easily take several hours a day.
Oh, it does. It absolutely does. And the process is not as quick as some people would like sometimes, especially for the rapid tests. One of the metaphors or stories we like to say is that sometimes people think that there's a bat signal that goes up in the sky when you test positive and that public health knows instantly. But we don't. There's a lag time sometimes for us to get that lab report in. Sometimes it takes up to 24 hours or even longer. And so it's really nice to have the hotline and to have the self-report so that if people do test positive, they know to reach out to us right away. And we can talk about, do the interview, talk about your contacts and get that process started.
Got to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back with Vanessa Becker and Kristen Rutledge from the Douglas Public Health Network. They interview a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1247 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. And later today, we will have, if we can get the computer to cooperate there, a Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show with the Commissioner of Dirt. No Inside Douglas County program tomorrow as we've got the Pac-12 game with the Oregon Ducks. Vanessa Becker and Kristen Rutledge from the Douglas Public Health Network. We're in the midst of talking about the quarantine situation. Vanessa, how do people react? I imagine some folks maybe aren't surprised, but some are when a contact tracer calls and tells them that they need to quarantine.
Yeah, so the reactions are really varied, of course. Some people already know. One of the things that we ask cases, people who've tested positive or who are presumptive cases, is to reach out to your own contacts immediately and let them know that, that you have tested positive. And so a lot of times, particularly now with the rapid testing, a lot of times when we make that first call to contacts, they've already been alerted. So that if that's the case, then usually they're, less worried and less freaked out. But there are plenty of instances where we've reached out and been the first to tell somebody that they're exposed. And that can be really scary, and people's responses are really varied. We've done a lot of training with our teams to just to be really good listeners and to answer questions just talk in general about what can we do to support you to stay in quarantine, what kind of questions do you have about symptoms. And so usually that interview or that first call ends really well. But there's often a lot of fear involved. We also don't We do not release the person that you were exposed to. So if you're getting a call from us and you did not know that you'd been exposed and we're telling you for the first time, we're not going to relay the private information of that case to you. But we will say it looks like you were exposed on this date at this place. And a lot of times people can put it together on their own. But it's important to keep that information private for cases so that they don't receive any stigma or pushback from their contacts about that. So it really varies, but generally speaking, a lot of times I have heard from one of the contact tracers epidemiology team members just a couple of days ago, and he got a call in our call center from a contact, and they said, well, I haven't heard from anybody a contact tracer yet. And he said, well, actually, I'm your contact tracer. I've been talking to you every day. And And it was kind of funny because she chuckled and said, oh, I didn't realize you guys are so supportive. I thought, you know, I thought contact tracers were, you know, living in stayed in the van outside my house monitoring me. And he laughed, said, no, we're here just to support you and answer your questions about quarantine and to monitor for symptoms. And if you develop symptoms, get you what you need, whether it's a thermometer or pulse ox or more groceries or dog food or, you know, what have you. So I think that generally speaking, I think most people have been really, really kind.
Now, how long is quarantine? It sounds like for people I've talked to who've been in quarantine that it varies.
Yeah, so it does vary. So there's a couple of some more categories. We love categories in public health, right? So we use the word isolation for people who've tested positive or who are presumptive cases. And presumptive cases, there's a lot of myths around what a presumptive case is. That is a public health label, and we take presumptive cases really seriously and who we bump up to be a presumptive. In order to be a presumptive case, you have to be a close contact of a known case, usually a household member. You have to have two of four what we call golden symptoms in order to qualify. And then we actually staff it with three of the different epidemiology team members before we classify somebody as a presumptive. So if you're a presumptive or a confirmed case, then your isolation, or otherwise known as quarantine, is 10 days from symptom onset. If you don't have any symptoms, then it's 10 days from the test date that you had. So those are for cases. For contacts, quarantine has shifted and changed. And I explain this probably a dozen times a day to folks. So I'll try to make it make sense, but it's confusing even for us in public health. So initially it was 14 days of quarantine from your point of exposure. So 14 days from the last time that you saw that person. And we established that last day of exposure in that initial interview with the case. But the CDC changed that, and then the Oregon investigative guidelines for Oregon Health Story for COVID also changed to have three different options for quarantine. So we still have the 14-day quarantine if you are a contact in a long-term care or facility, a nursing home facility. And if you have any symptoms as a contact, then you have 14 days of quarantine. If you have no symptoms, and you test negative on day 5, 6, or 7 after you've been exposed, then you can have a 7-day quarantine. If you don't test and you don't have symptoms, it's just a standard 10-day.
Wow.
It's super confusing.
Definitely a little complex. Kristen, I'm curious, contact tracers then, I mean, it sounds like you've got cases coming in at all hours. Do you have people working like graveyard shifts and things like that?
Yeah, we do. There's actually three of us that are on call 24/7. So we set that up a month ahead of time. We send that out to the hospital, all of the providers, so that at any hour, somebody can call us and we can either answer questions or take a case report.
Wow. What kinds of things for you have you learned from dealing with all of this the past year?
One of the biggest things I've learned is the relationships with our community partners have really allowed us to work on this together as a community. We've been able to reach people better. We've been able to do more work than just, you know, the six of us that we're starting. That's been one of the biggest ones. The other one is we just have a great team. We've really learned to rely on each other and to help each other out. The biggest thing about our team is that none of us complain. We all just say, what can we do to help each other? And that has been, for our team, amazing.
Vanessa, what about you? What have you learned in the past year of dealing with this?
Yeah, I think I concur with everything that Kristen said. I think it's been pretty remarkable for me from a communications perspective to sit back and watch how communications have shifted and changed, and how we have been fairly successful in not having to retract anything that we've said locally about COVID, about health education, about COVID. About what recommendations are. So I think that's been a really interesting perspective for me. I also think I've developed just an incredible appreciation, just as Kristen just described, for the diversity of our team. So of those 30 plus people, we've got just a tremendous amount of local talent. We've got people who are retired physicians, nurse practitioners. We've got nursing students. We've got medical assistants, we've got dental hygienists, we've got a wildland firefighter that's working with us, we've got paramedics, and I'm sure I'm missing a whole bunch more, but just the incredible amount of talent, local talent, and dedication to this has been, it's been, I have to say, probably one of, if not the best team that I've ever worked with in my career. So it's been just my development of appreciation for them just gets deeper every day.
Kristen, I imagine this situation is lasting longer than you originally thought it might.
I would agree. Yeah, we were prepared for a while, but we didn't expect a year from now that we would still be doing as much as that we're doing and have the biggest team that we still do.
What about your plan for DPHN going forward? What kinds of things are ahead?
Anna. You want me to answer that, Kristen?
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
You're certainly welcome to as well, Kristen. I think now that we're rolling out the vaccine, I think that shifted our work and our teams a little bit. We don't know. This is our first pandemic, as I've said, for the last year, the first pandemic any of us have lived through. So, it's kind of unknown what's going to happen. I think we've got the structure and the infrastructure now with all of our teams to continue to do the case investigation and the contact tracing and the support for people who are in quarantine and isolation and the real, really key epidemiology work that needs to happen. But it'll be interesting to see where we're at 6 months from now. If the vaccine really, if we do get to some level of herd immunity in the community and if that reduces our caseload, that would be great.
Kristen, about 30 seconds from you on what is ahead.
I really echo what Vanessa said. Well, we have a great team. We continue to do training. We're really looking forward to getting those vaccines out to people. We're doing a great job with the drive-throughs, and I'm excited to see more people become eligible and really be a part of this.
All right, Kristen Rutledge and Vanessa Becker from the Douglas Public Health Network, out of time for now. Thanks to both of you for being on today.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
1258 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.